had been used would imply, you know, that
with
if no 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 if, in if, with another pitch,
oh,
if,
oh,
okay, that it would imply that, you know, if he wants he can do it, if not he doesn't. In other words, you know, what Rabbi Akiva says, it's reshus, it's optional for the girl hadon, right? He says no, it doesn't speak at all like that. What does it say? It says v'rotzach, and he is to murder, right? V'rotzach girl hadon suriteach, and that is, he's to slay the manslayer, right?
So he is obligated to do
it. Obligated to do it, right, according to Rabbi Yosef. All right, the Rabbi Akiva, how about him? How does he interpret the pasuk? So he says, Miksiv, tell me, is it written Yirtzach, he will slay? In other words, he must slay? No, it says Barotzach. In other words, if he happened to do it, he has the reshus. But otherwise, he has no right, and you certainly can't drag in anybody else and say that anybody else can go and
do it.
Right. All right, let's take a look for a moment at the Rashi over here. The next Rashi over here.
Yeah, okay.
After, you know, we said that even if he went in the cave underneath the ground, but still
doesn't
provide the protection.
Right.
So Rotzach says, Rashi, Ikol Ferushe is possible to interpret, he says, Loshen Sibri. We can understand, it's possible to interpret the Rotzach as being a command. Not simply that if he slays,
Right.
That it could be interpreted as being a command, kimo, and he gives a similar example. It says, v'yotso b'tzalel v'oholiyov, right? That b'tzalel and oholiyov are to make the Mishkan, this is what they were talking about. Now, obviously, it didn't mean that b'tzalel and oholiyov had the option, if they felt like it, they could build a Mishkan. It's to mean that this is a command, that b'tzalel and oholiyov, they want to build a Mishkan.
Right.
But then says Rashi, Yikol Ferushe, however, it's also impossible to interpret the same thing as Lashon Rishus. As you know, simply optional. Kimo, the Yosad Hashem Lahem, which means that God would do unto them if they did this and this. In other words, that it's not necessarily that he's going to do it, but, you know, God might do if he feels like it, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So that's Rishus. Okay. All right, there isn't very much over there. I mean, but I just wanted to show you, you know, how Rashi is interpreting our text over here.
In other words, he agrees that it is a command, you have to do it.
Well, what he says is that it is possible to interpret it that way. And he quoted, you know, the Yosef Betzalel or the Yom.
In other words,
it could also be interpreted simply that if they feel like it, they could.
In other words, if the Rotzeach came out from the walls of the city and went into the area of the 2,000 Amot,
he's still protected.
He's still protected. But if he just went outside of it,
anybody coming along could kill him. That's according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, but not according to Rabbi Akiva. Right. Rabbi Akiva wasn't great on death penalties, if you remember.
I mean,
remember what he said earlier, you know, what we had in the first chapter, no doubt. Sanhedrin, if it slays, if it, you know, puts to death someone even once in 70 years, it's called a Ritzayah. And then remember, we learned, you know, at the very end over there, that if we had our way, we would be able to save everybody from the death penalty. Right. So then they said, yeah, but if you do it your way, then you're only going to encourage murderers in Israel. Yeah. Very contemporary argument.
With the slaying of Rabin.
Right. Not just Rabin, I mean, but in general. I'm talking about American problems. Look at all the murders that are being committed over here, and yet, you know, you always have your ACLU.
And they get away with murder.
Right, unfortunately.
Like Mr. Simpson.
Yeah. Okay, so to continue now. Omar Mar Zutra Batuvia. Omar Rav, he said in the name of Rav, he said this word Seyach Sheyotzo Chutzlat Chum, that if the Rotseyach left the boundary, right? He, in other words, he went outside the 2,000 amos that surround it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in other words, he's exposing himself, you know, to possible death.
Right.
Metzoy Girl Adom HaRogoy, right? And the girl Adom found him and slew him. So, Ne'erag Olav. Then, the Goel Adom, who murdered him, is liable to the death penalty.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, his statement already is far more extreme than even, you know, what Rabbi Yossi Aglili had to say.
True.
And certainly not what Rabbi Akiva had to say.
This is an entirely different
right.
fact.
Right. So they say, come on, whose opinion is he following? Lo Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Obviously, he's not in accordance with the opinion that was just expressed by Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Lo Rabbi Akiva. Right? Or, you know, it's like Rabbi Akiva says, who the Omar? So, on the contrary, when what he's stating an opinion based on a different thing. Kehai Tano, in accordance with, authority, the Tanya who learned, Rabbi Eliezer, Oimer, Rabbi Eliezer says that Omdo, Ad Omdo, Lefnei Hoedolim Mishpat, that you cannot execute a Goel Hadom, I mean you cannot execute a slayer or a tzeach before he has had an opportunity to stand before a court for judgment. In other words, the Besdin has to judge him and put him into the Ir HaMikvah, right? Remember what we said before, that procedure was, if he committed manslaughter, then what was the first thing he had to do? Go to the Ir HaMikvah. Okay? As a matter of fact, we took it one step further.
Before being judged.
Right, before being judged.
In other words, if he feels that it is done inadvertently,
yeah,
go directly to a Ir HaMikvah.
Exactly. And then we learned there was even another opinion expressed in the Gemara that even if he were amazed, he had murdered deliberately, he is to go first to the Ir HaMikvah, and then what happens? Then the elders, right, the place where the murder was committed, they sent to the Ir HaMikvah, and they like extradite him over there. You know, the Besdin in the Ir HaMikvah sends him down over there to the Besdin where he's going to be judged. And that's at Omdo. Okay? So, obviously, according to Mar Zutra, the first thing, that the first interpretation we have to give is that the Goel Hadom has no right to slay the Rotseach before the Besdin has had an opportunity to even judge what the punishment of the Rotseach should be.
Yeah, whether it was deliberate or not.
Right.
Plus, if it was deliberate,
yeah,
he has no refuge at all. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's possible. You know,
if it was a deliberate murder.
If it was deliberate murder, then obviously, murder. Right. If it was premeditated, then of course they would sentence him to death. You know, when his case came before the Besdin, yeah, right. I mean, well, we said that they're going to be escorted, and not only that, we said, but remember, with the escort business, you have to have straight Talmidei Chachamim, you know, to accompany him, and you know, to tell the Goel Adam, look, you're not allowed to do this. You can't shed innocent blood. So on and so forth. Remember, you know, we had that description
right
in there. Okay. So he says, Ma Talmud Leimar, what is the Torah trying to teach us, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who is being quoted by Rabbi, he says. So he says, the Fish and Emar, inasmuch as the Pasuk says, Rotzach Goel Hadom is Rotzeach, right? That the Goel Hadom may slay the Rotzeach. Yochol miyad, are we to say immediately? In other words, as soon as he catches him? No, he says. Talmud Loimar, this is why the Pasuk says, Ad omdo lefnei hoedolim mishpat, that you have to first give him an opportunity to stand before the Besdin in order to determine his sentence. For Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Akiva, and how about those two who are not in agreement with the statement that we said? He says, Hi, Ad omdo lefnei hoedolim mishpat. What did they do? My Dorshubei, what did they do with this pasuk? So he says, Ahubi Boilei, they need it for a different teaching. Tanya, even as we learned, that Rabbi Akiva Oimer, he says, Benayin the Sanhedrin, Shevro Echot Shehorages Hanefesh, Shein Mimisin Oisei Achi Yavon Vezdin Acher. How do we know that? Let's say there was a Sanhedrin, and right in the eyesight of the members of the Sanhedrin,
they saw
a guy murder another one. So how do we know she'inu misin asol? How do we know that, in other words, they cannot put to death, that is, this Sanhedrin cannot put to death the murderer ad she'avod, before he stands for judgment bevezdin acher, in a different court? How do we know that? In other words, the Sanhedrin that is serving now, that they witnessed the event, they cannot also be the ones to judge, but it has to be judged by a different court altogether. Okay? Talmud Leimar, so that the Pasuk tells us, the reason being, Ad Omdov Dehoed Ola Mishpat. In other words, until he stands before an assembly, meaning over here, of course, a Bezdin, for judgment. Ad Sheyamo Bezdin Acher. And it has to be not the original Bezdin, which saw the murder being committed, but it has to be a different Bezdin altogether. It has to be judged by a different one. It's interesting because of the fact that you see how careful they are in order to try to preserve the life of a person who has committed murder, to see if there's some kind of way, you know, that you could get out. And certainly we cannot say that a witness automatically becomes a judge. That can't happen. They have to each fulfill different functions. So, Tana Rabbani. Right. Im yotzo yotzei horotzeach. And what would happen if the rotzeach goes out? In other words, he leaves the miklat. So he says, ein li ela b'mezit. How do I know that this applies, that I might think that it applies only to the one who deliberately is leaving the Yir HaMiklot, that what? That the Goel Hadom, you know, could catch him and kill him, right?
Right.
But B'Shoigeg B'Nayin, how do we know that this would also apply in the case of he innocently stepped out beyond the boundary, right? And then he was slain, you know, by the Goel Hadom. So how do we know that it would apply also there? So Talmud Leimar, that's why the Pasuk says, Im Yotze Yotze, right? That if he goes out, and B'Kol Bokim, in any event. In other words, Yotze Yotze would mean, Yotze, he goes out, but makes it, or Yotze, it would imply, even if he went out, B'Shogeg, that if he leaves, goes out, you know, even if it were innocently, he didn't realize that he was going beyond the boundary.
Right.
Although I assume that they must have had markers or something.
Sure.
But for whatever reason it was that he went out, so it was not, you know, a deliberate action. Okay? The Hot Tanya, but didn't we learn another teaching, another Baraisa, which says what? V'mezeg ne'erag, v'shogeg goyle, that if he does it deliberately, then he could be killed by the Goel Hadom. This is how we're understanding it over here. But B'Shogeg, if he did it by accident, by mistake, then Goyle, he would go into exile. Of course, we'll say he's already in exile. But we'll see what happens in that particular case, because that's going to follow what happens. Okay?
Mm.
So he says, Loi kasha. He says, not a kasha, it's not a difficulty. He says, Ho kamando omar, amrinon, dibrater kol shum b'nei odom. There are those who say that the Torah speaks simply like ordinary people. In other words, it talks to us in a human language, the way people normally talk. And that's why you don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to try to
get a meaning for each and every individual
word. People would say in the Hebrew, I mean, it's a normal thing in biblical Hebrew to say Yotza Yotza. It's a normal thing to say in Shemoat Ishmael. Of course, you can give a drash to it, you understand?
Mm.
There's a very fun drash, by the way, you know, in Shemoat Ishmael. In other words, that if you pay attention and you started to listen to Rebbe Shalalem, then, you know, more and more, you see. In other words, good actions will lead to more good actions.
More
whereas, If you forget the Lord your God, then of course, you know, it'll lead to, you know, bigger further, problem. Yes, and the greater there is, you know, forgetfulness of God, you see. So it can be interpreted with the drash. But nevertheless, it's also the fact, I mean, that the Bible happens to like to use infinitives with verbs. That's a normal usage, okay? So this is what it is. So, in that case, getting back over here, if we say that Adam, then in that particular case, then we don't make a drash on Yotso, where we said that it applies both to the Mazid and the Shogeg. It only would apply to a Mazid, but not to a Shogeg, right? So Amar Abaye says, Bistabra says, you know, to me it makes sense, that we are applying over here that the Torah speaks the way ordinary people speak. And I can show you, he says, because let's analyze this a little bit. He says, Shelo yehi soifei chomer b'tchilotzei. This is in order that what happens to him finally should not be any more severe than what happened to him at the beginning. Ma tchilosei b'meizid neherag, but v'shogeg goyle, just as in the original action, when he committed, you know, when he killed, okay? If at the time when he killed, he was b'meizid, right? He did it deliberately, so then what is his punishment? His punishment has to be neherag, that he's sentenced to death as his punishment. But v'shogeg, if he did it, you know, inadvertently, as we said, innocently, and so in that case, goyle, we learned that the punishment for him is to go into exile. So he says, af sofo, so likewise over here, his final judgment, shall we say, is b'mezid neherag and v'shogeg, that if he deliberately went outside of the Ir HaMiklot, outside of the tchum of the Ir HaMiklot, then he deserves to be put to death. But b'shogeg, if he did it innocently, then in that case he simply goes into exile, right? So this is where it stands at this point, right? Okay. But we'll see in when we learn, when we turn the page, what happens if he is already in the Ir HaMiklot and he happens to kill inadvertently? Then what happens to him?
Again?
Yeah.
Well, you mean he's just living
while
there?
He's living in the Ir HaMiklot and he happens
for
to
another crime.
Right. Yeah, he accidentally commits another murder. Right. So what happens? So the answer is, as we'll see, that then they have to move him from one place to another place, or maybe to a different Ir HaMiklot or something like that. Because we're still talking about innocent, we're not talking
about
the place.
Right.
Okay?
Talking about a guy.
But he deserves Golas a second time. So how do you have Golas if you're already there?
Yeah, he didn't finish the first time.
Right. Okay. So now they continue with another inyan. It says, Tanichado, since we're talking about Goel Hadom and the fact that, you know, he's permitted, you know, to exact the punishment, it says, Tanichado, we learn a statement which says, Av Shehorag Benoi, if a father happened to kill his son accidentally, of course, then Nase Loi Goel Hadom. Then what happens? Excuse me, I have to be like this. Yeah. Of Shed Horag, this is where I should put the comma, okay. If the father happened to slay, naturally, who did he slay? He slayed his son, right? So, the Noi Naselo Goel Hadam, then his son, not obviously the murdered one, but another son, right, would then assume the role of Goel Hadam, okay? This is what the statement says.
Father's the one who killed his son.
The father happened to
kill his son.
Yeah, whatever it was, let's say, you know, he fell
now
down.
The brother was climbing up.
He had a hatchet and, you know, happened to kill his son. You know, without meaning to do it, but he did it. Okay. So in that case, who is the Goel Hadam? obviously it can't be the dead son.
he's dead.
But another son, according to this teaching, can be the Goel Hadam. Okay? He assumes the role of Goel Hadam. Obviously, it means then that the father would have to be sentenced, and et cetera, et cetera, and go with him. So, all right. Betanya Yidok, and then we learned the different Baraisa, which says what? Says, Ein Benona Selo Goel Hadam, that the son cannot become a Goel Hadam for his father. So one statement says that the son becomes a Goel Hadam, and another statement says he can't be Goel Hadam for his father. Right? So the Gemara wants to know, he says, Lema Harabi Yosi HaGalili V'Harabi Akiva. Are we to say that what we're talking about over here is similar to what we just said about the difference of opinion between Rabbi Yosi HaGlili and Rabbi Akiva, and that Rabbi Yosi HaGlili said what? It says that whether he's, you know, mazed, b'shogeg, at any rate, it's a mitzvah what?
To kill him.
It's a mitzvah the Goel Adam to kill him, right. And the other statement, you know, Rabbi Akiva says, that's no mitzvah. It's only a reshus in the case of the Goel Adam, but it's no mitzvah to the Goel Adam. Okay? So are we to say then that the opinion over here, it follows it. V'tisparo, and we might explain it, that bein lamando omar mitzvah, bein lamando omar reshus mishori. We could say, however, that maybe logic tells us what? That it makes no difference whether it's the opinion of Rabbi Yosi HaGlili who said that it's a mitzvah to kill the Goel Adam, or the opinion of, you know, Rabbi Akiva says that it is reshus, in other words, it's only optional. Mishori, can we defend the idea that a son has the right to become a Goel Adam in order to do what?
To kill his father.
To kill his father, right. If the father steps out, then in that case he exposes himself to death. Can we say that the son can do it? The Omar Rabba Barav Huna. Didn't Rabba Barav Huna say, V'chein Tanan V'Rabbi Yishmoel? And likewise, we have a statement mentioned in the from the school of Rabbi Yishmoel, La Kol, for any reason whatever, Ein Habein Naaseh Shaliach LeYoviv LaHakoseh LeKidilosei, that a son has no authority to become a Shaliach, in other words, like a messenger for the Beis Din to carry out punishment against his father, either LaHakoseh, either that the father should receive Malkus. Or that he should be put under a curse, in other words, what we call nidui,
like
put into
harem,
exactly, yeah. Right? So the son cannot be the one, you know, to tell his father, you know, the Beis Din has authorized me to tell you that you are now, as of this moment, in the harem. Cannot do it. The only case where it is permissible for a son to have an action against his father is chutz, except for mimesis. The mimesis is the person, you know, who persuades other Jews to become idol worshippers. Okay? So because there, Shaharei Omer Torah, in the case of the mimesis, the Torah said, it's more strict. What did the Torah say over there? It says, Lo sachmol, you are not to have any pity, Lo sachaselov, nor are you to place literally a covering over him. In other words, you're not to show him any mercy whatever. Because to lead fellow Jews into idolatry, this is about the worst crime that a Jew could possibly do. Okay? So he says, Eloi Kasha. So he says, no, it's not a Kasha. Why is it a Kasha? He says, because when it speaks about Beno, Beno might be understood a little differently. It says, Ho Bibno. In the case of his son, the son definitely cannot be a shaliach in order to, you know, to exact punishment on his father. He cannot do that. But however, the son of his son, in other words, the grandson, that already the relationship is not as close as the case of father and son, and therefore a grandson might be able to do these things if he is delegated by the Beis Din in order to carry it out. Okay? All right. We'll learn maybe about another 5-10 minutes or so.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go down at least to the bottom of the page and up to the top of the next one.
Right.
All right. The new Mishnah now says, Ilan Shehu Oimed Besochat Chum. All right, here we have the case. There is a tree, and this tree is standing within the boundary of the Yer HaNiflot. Okay, within the Chum, right, as we said before, within the 2,000 Amos area. V'noifei note chusat Chum, but the branches happen to be extending beyond, outside of the Chum. Okay? Or let's take the opposite case. Omeid chutzat chum, or let's take the case where the tree is standing outside the chum, right?
The
noifei noite besochat chum.
The branches are.
On the other hand, the branches, you know, they bend over within the chum. Then, of course, I mean, the question is so how does it affect us? The answer is, if he's, let's say, either on one of the branches, or if he's underneath a branch, right?
Yeah.
So in that particular case, are we to say, I mean, how do we judge? Is he in or is he out? You understand?
Yeah.
Is he within the tchum and therefore protected, or is he
without
the tchum?
If he is in within the boundaries of the tchum, he's within the tchum.
Okay. But it's not as simple as that. Why? Because what the Mishnah says over here is HaKoel Holech Achar Hanov. Everything goes according to the branches. In other words, the determining factor is not where the tree itself is, but the determining factor is what? Where the branches are. This is what it says. So, if even the tree, let's say, were outside the Tchum, according to the Mishnah, obviously the Gemara is not altogether happy with the idea. Okay. But if the tree is standing outside the city, right, and the branches are within the tchum, and he happens to be underneath the tree, or he's on the, let's say, on one of the branches, then the Goel Adam cannot do what?
Can't
kill him, because he's being protected, because he's within the tchum.
Right.
If, on the other hand, even if the tree was standing, according to the Mishnah, right, if the tree is standing within the tchum, it's right at the boundary, but the tree itself is standing within the tchum, but the branches extend outside, right? And where is he? He might even be, let's say, climbing the trunk of the tree or something like that.
Which would be outside, doesn't it?
No. This time said that the tree is within the tchum and the branches are outside.
Okay.
All right?
So what happens?
So if we go according to what the Mishnah says over here,
then he's still able to be
right, now call Hole Chachar Hadof, if everything follows where the branches are located, then in that case he would be liable.
Right.
Now obviously there's something that is stiff-fished, you know, that it's not quite right. So Raminu, that's why they asked the Kasha about this. It says, Elon. All right, let's look at the Rashi for a second before we continue. It says, HaKol Holech Achar Hano, right? That everything follows according to the branches. Afilu hu biikoro shebesochat kum. Even if the ikor, in other words, the principal part of the tree is within the tchum.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Harehu ki yotzei chutzat kum. It would be as if he were outside the tchum. The yim yikoro chutzat kum, benoifei besochat kum. And what if the main part of the tree were outside the tchum, but the branches are within the tchum? So afa ikor kole, then even if he were, let's say, on the trunk of the tree, okay, if he was on the trunk of the tree, which technically is outside, but
right,
because the branches
are inside,
so that therefore he is given
safe
shelter, right? So Raminu, that's why they ask a kasha. He says, what do you mean? Hold it. Says Ilan Shuhu Oimed Besochapnim. Alright, we have a case of a tree. This is in reference to Maaseh Sheni, Mishnah from there. Okay, says over there, if a tree is standing within Yerushalayim, within the wall of Yerushalayim, within the territory of Yerushalayim, okay, Benoite Lachutz, and you know, the branches, in other words, would face outside, they would be hanging outside. or made b'chutz, or let's take the other. Let's say the tree is standing outside the city of Yerushalayim, v'noyta lifnim, and the branches go into the city. So the ruling over there is mekeneged achoyma v'lifnim, from where the wall stands and within, that's klifnim, right? Then it's considered as if it's within. Mikaneged achoyma v'lachutz, but any area which is outside, if the tree is, you know, outside, then kilachutz, then it's judged according to being outside. Now, if we were to apply this to the case that we said, if we were to make this comparison between the tree and Ma'aseh Sheni and Yerushalayim to this, so we'd say it all depends where you are. If you are within, between the wall and the interior, then you are within. If you are from on the outside of the wall and, you know, and, without, then in that particular case you are outside. And therefore, what are we saying? What we're saying is that in the case of Ma'aseh Sheni, whether the tree was in and the branches out, or the tree was out and the branches in, we don't make a blanket ruling that what? We go according to where the branches are. What do we make a ruling? We make a ruling that we determine where exactly a person is at this particular moment. Is he within or is he without?
Well, Ma'aseh Sheni is a portion of the sacrifice.
Yeah, well, it's not a sacrifice exactly.
But it's a portion.
There is a Ma'aseh which is also a sacrifice. I mean, you're right. I mean, there is what they call Matzar B'Karcha Tzenecha. In other words, you know, the tenth of the. A tenth of the Bokor and the Tzon and so on, right? That has to be also consumed in Yerushalayim. What about fruits and stuff like that, you know? So the ruling is that, you know, you have to bring it to Yerushalayim, but obviously if it's not going if it's going to spoil by the time you get it to Yerushalayim,
you have to take
right,
the money
exactly,
and buy
exactly,
other things.
That's, all right, that is what is known as pidyon. In other words, you are redeeming the Ma'aseh Sheni and using the money, which you then have to hold in a special purse and take it to Yerushalayim, and there you buy food with it in order to celebrate, because it has to be, you know, the Samach Tov Tnei Hashem Lekecha. You have to rejoice before the Lord your God. So, Nashri, how do you rejoice? And Eskud, and Trinkud, and so on. I mean, this is what you have to do.
So.
Okay? Right. Okay. So, at any rate, we see that there is a contradiction between the tree in reference to Ma'aseh Sheni and the tree, as in our Mishnah over here relating to the Rotzeach. So he says, Ma'aseh Arai, look, he says, excuse me, Ma'aseh Arai Miklot Koromis, I didn't read it right. Are you going to try to make a contradiction between Ma'aseh in comparison to the Orei Miklot, to the cities of refuge? He says, no, the determining factor is a little different in each case. Ma'aseh b'chayma Torah Rachmona. The Torah itself says that the determination, whether you have to give Ma'aseh and so on, this is determined by, are you within the wall of Jerusalem or are you outside the wall of Yerushalayim? But as far as Orei Miklot, the Orei Miklot has nothing to do with geography, according to this, but it says Bedira Tola Rachmona. It depends where he is dwelling. This is what's the important thing. If he dwells within the city, that's one thing, and it gives him refuge. But if he goes out of the city, then in that case, it's not okay. All right. I think I'm going to stop at this particular point over here. Okay, I'm getting a little bit tired. My voice is getting a little bit. Okay. So, all right. So we're three lines from the bottom right now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, is it start a new year now?
Well, it'll be a little continuation of this, but there isn't too much to go. I don't know if you take a look and turn the page, you see that we're heading down the home stretch as far as the chapter is concerned. I don't know whether we'll finish it next week, but we'll certainly come pretty close to it.
Certainly,
within the next 2 weeks, we're going to finish this chapter. And, that'll lead us already to the third and final chapter.
Yud Gimel.
Right. And Yud Gimel, beginning of, Elohim Halokin, this already takes up the remainder. Actually, we're just about at the halfway point over here in the Masechta. So in other words, right through Yud Gimel Omid Aleph, we've gone halfway through, and then the next chapter completes the Masechta. I think that we can look forward to Mirtzah Hashem, that we'll be making a Siyum sometime in, I don't know, late
Pesach.
Spring or something.
Pesach time.
I don't know whether it's Pesach. It depends on how fast we go. If we had difficulties, we'll take a little slower.
Alright, so now
we don't have difficulties, then we'll go a little faster. I'd say, Kate, the very end has some beautiful,
got it, right.
Oh, beautiful. Terrific. So that'll be our reward.
So we're three lines from the bottom on Yud Beis.
Right, three lines, right. Okay.
Yud Beis, okay.
All right.
Yud Beis.
Well, Yud Beis, Amud Aleph, down towards the bottom of the page.
Third
we'll
line
review again the Mishnah and then continue with the Gemara, because it's a continuation, actually.
Okay.
All right, so the Mishnah says, Ilan Shehu Oimed B'Sechat Chum, if you have a tree which is standing within the boundaries of the Ir HaMiklot, you know, the City of Refuge, but this same tree has V'Nofu Inoite Chutzlat Chum, that the branches of this tree, they turn out of the boundary, in other words, they're outside the boundary.
Out of the 2,000.
Right? So in that, but right, of course, by the Tchum, I explained that this is a 2,000 amos belt around the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that particular case, all made chutz l'tchum, or let's take the case where the tree is actually standing outside of the boundary of the city, the nofel neuter b'sochat chum, but the branches turn in towards the city.
Right.
So akol holeich acharanot, that everything follows the where the branches are. In other words, if a person, you know, is, let's say, underneath the branches,
he's safe.
Right. So he could be safe in the second circumstance.
As long as he's within the 2,000.
Even though the tree itself, you know, has its the roots and the stock, you know, outside, but the very fact that he's standing underneath the branches within the city, that provides him shelter. But on the other hand, as according to this, if the tree is within the city but the branches are outside, right? So the fact that he's standing by the tree in the city, this doesn't give him immunity according to this Mishnah. According to the Mishnah, he's not going to get immunity. If Hakol Holeich Achar Hadov, that everything is going to follow the branches, since the branches are outside, it means that he does not have the protection while he's standing underneath the, right next to the tree, let's say, in the within the city.
Outside the boundary.
No, he's within the boundary.
Yeah.
But the branches are outside. Now, according to this Mishnah, which of course they're going to contest it a little bit later on. Because obviously, it doesn't sound right, but still, right now what they're saying is, Hakol Holeich Achar Hanof. Everything follows the way the branches are. So, if, as we said, he's standing underneath branches which are within the city, then he has his protection. If the tree, on the other hand, even though it may be within the tchum, but the branches are outside, then even though he is within the tchum, it provides no protection for him. Now, this, of course, is astonishing.
It's astonishing
because we would say he's in the city, right? He's within the bounds. He's not within the walled part of the city, but he still is within the boundaries. The tchum provides protection for him. is what we said before.
Let me ask you a question then. What if he was standing within the chum, right, and the boundary,
right,
and not and the tree is on one side and he's outside the tree? In other words, he's within the boundary. He moves out from under the tree.
If he's nowhere near the tree, then it's Kodesh.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
He's sitting out of the tree.
Right. I agree with you.
Doesn't make sense.
But they're trying to prove a point. The point is that the tree itself, you have to judge the protection that it offers only by where the branches are.
Let me ask another question.
Yeah.
If the tree is, let's say the roots and its trunk are within the tomb, okay?
Right.
Okay,
right.
And the branches are outside.
Correct.
Okay, and he's under the branches outside the of that tree. Outside the tomb.
Right.
Underneath the branches. So what is he protected or isn't he?
That's a very good question. Okay.
Because that would be in effect extending the 2,000. Amud.
Correct.
But knowing that
it's a big problem.
He's got that situation
right.
He's a fugitive, why would he go to the boundaries?
But you see, we just said, I mean, that as long as it provides protection outside, that the chum, if he's over there, then the fact that the branches are covering him over there, he would be okay. I mean, this is the way the Mishnah seems to read it.
Yeah, I understand, but
it's
illogical.
Right. Okay. Rashi, all right, let's take a look at Rashi over here, okay? All right, it says, HaKol Holech HaKadov, right? Everything follows the way the branches are. So he says, Afilo Hu Biyakoro, even though he is where the root of the tree is, in other words, within the Tchum, right? Shem B'Soch HaTchum, Harei Hu Kiyotzi Chutz LaTchum, then it is considered as if he had gone outside of the Tchum.
I don't understand that.
Okay. But let's take the other case where the tree is, the root of the tree is outside the tchum, right? The nofa besocha tchum, but the branches are within the tchum. So in that case, afa ikar kolet, then even if he stood underneath, you know, if he stood next to the tree, next to the ikar, in other words, next to the, let's say, the trunk of the tree, he stood next to it and it's outside the tchum, nevertheless, the fact that the branches are
within the chum,
it's going to provide shelter for. It's going to provide refuge for him.
Doesn't make sense.
No. Okay. I mean, the tree is outside, but he's right. Okay. So, but this is what the Mishnah is implying.
Yeah.
Okay.
I understand.
So, of course, it's. Obviously, there are a couple of difficulties, as we can sense. Difficulty number one comes in from the fact that they're trying to make a comparison between here, this case of the tree, and what kind of shelter does it provide, with a case of a tree in Yerushalayim or just outside of Yerushalayim. And the tree over there is in reference to Ma'aseh Sheni. All right, so let's review again what Ma'aseh Sheni is for a moment, okay? Essentially, during the time, you know, that people lived in Eretz Israel, they were subject to three different tithes, okay? Tithe number one is the one that they gave to the Levi, okay? I mean, it's supposed to go to the Levi, in reality, they had a hand over to the Kohen also.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Tithe number two, the first and second years, and also the fourth and fifth years of the, you know, the 7 year cycle, those 4 years he had to take a tenth of the fruits and bring them to Yerushalayim, and there he would eat them. Okay, there's also Masa Bokar, also, in other words, on cattle too would be one tenth and so on, which would also have to be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten over there.
Masa
Sheni particularly with
the first 4 years.
Yeah, because it's written Masa de Gontcho, Te Roshcho, Yitzarecho, so that refers to agricultural products, okay? Which would be year number one, year number two, and then year number four and year number five. The third year and the sixth year, instead of having Masa Sheni, they had instead Masa Oni, where they gave 10% directly to the poor. Okay? So, I mean, that of course would be in addition to all the other things that they gave to the poor people. But this was a special Maaser that they had to give to the poor people. All right. We also have a law in the Torah that says, you know, that if the place where you're going to, in other words, to Yerushalayim, is too far from you. So in that case, what you have to do is that you have to take the fruits and sell them. You take the money and you put it aside, you tie it up literally in a bundle, Sata Kesa Biotcha, that's what's written, and then you have to take it to Yerushalayim, and there you spend it, B'chol Asher Tehaveh Nafshecha, anything that your heart or your spirit desires to eat, Ba'bokor, Ba'tzayin, Ba'yayin, Ba'sheichor, in other words, all kinds of goodies of meat and wine and drink and so on and so forth, and it has to be consumed Yerushalayim. Okay. Now, the problem over here that they're raising in reference to the tree is what? We learned that you must redeem
the money.
You have to redeem the fruit by selling it, and then you put aside the money. But this can only be done outside of Yerushalayim. Cannot be done in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, once you bring in fruit, you have to conceal it because it now has acquired the status of being sanctified. And sanctified means that you have to eat it over there. That's why you have to be careful. You're not going to bring rotten fruit in. But the point is, in Yerushalayim itself, you cannot sell it and redeem it. That you can't do. Okay? That is known as pidyon, in other words, redeeming, redemption, or pidyon. Another way to say the same thing. Right, yeah, it's a similar idea. So, they bring in this question now and says, Raminhu, we ask Akasha about this, based upon a Mishnah that we have concerning Maaser Sheni. All right, so it says over there that Elon, if you have a tree, Shehu Oibed, the Soich Hapnim, within the interior of Yerushalayim, in other words, within the boundaries of Yerushalayim, the Noitel Achutz, this is right on the border, and the branch. This time is standing outside the boundary of Yerushalayim, but Benotelifnim, but the branches head inside Yerushalayim, right? So he says, Mikaneged Achayim Ovelifnim Kilifnim. Then, from the wall within, it counts as within. In other words, let's say that it, you know, that the branch was in a little bit, okay?
In where?
In Yerushalayim, right? Or let's say that the tree itself
was in Yerushalayim itself.
Okay, then we say whatever, once you're within the boundary of Yerushalayim from the wall inward, then it's as if you were right in the heart of Jerusalem. And in that case, then what did we say? We say that you cannot redeem any more the fruit, but instead you have to consume whatever you brought, okay?
Right.
But, what if the tree is, in such a way that, in other words, you have an area, let's put it this way, the man is standing from the wall out, in other words, outside of the wall, okay? Even though, what did we say, the branches, let's say, may extend into the, okay, or whatever it may be.
Right.
So at any rate, what happens? So the answer is that what would be the implication? Okay. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Rashi says Ilan Shu Emei Bifnim, right? Be Yerushalayim. It's within Yerushalayim itself. All right. Well, Inyan Achilas Ma'aser Sheni Yerushalayim Hishnu. You're right, and we're learning it in reference to that. So he says, Mikaneged Achayim, etc. He says, Almo, he says, we see then that from this statement concerning the tree and Maaser Sheni, it says, therefore we see that Lo Nofo Shadin and Basor Ikor, Velo Ikor Basor Noif. He says, we do not say that the branches are going to follow where the root of the tree is, nor do we say that the root of the tree is going to follow where the branches are. Okay? Meaning what? Meaning that wherever the person is, this is going to determine as to whether he's within Yerushalayim or outside of Yerushalayim.
Has
nothing to do. If, for example, he stood next to the tree within Yerushalayim, then that's it. He's in Yerushalayim. If, on the other hand, let's say the tree was, or let's take a case, let's say that maybe he was standing in Yerushalayim and the branches came in Yerushalayim. Then in that case, in that he's
still within Yerushalayim.
Right, he's within Yerushalayim and therefore he's subject to the rules of Yerushalayim.
Right.
But if on the other hand, he were outside, either next to the tree or if he was underneath branches that came out, then in that particular case, by standing outside of Yerushalayim, the din for him is that he may redeem the fruit, or whatever it may be, because he is technically outside of Yerushalayim and not within Yerushalayim. So what do we see? We see that as far as Ma'aseh Sheni is concerned, it does not follow the rule that we laid down in the Mishnah over here,
right,
as far as the Ir HaMiklot is concerned.
Basically, what you're saying is that if he's within the boundaries of Jerusalem, he's
right
within, and
right,
has nothing to do with the tree whatsoever.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Correct.
But the Mishnah is different.
Yeah, the Mishnah that we have with the Ir HaMiklot,
yeah,
is a different story, because here the Mishnah said everything follows the way the branches are.
So how do you reconcile the two?
So the answer is, do you have to reconcile the two? So now they ask the following question. He says, okay, Maisera ori miklot karomis, are you trying to ask a kasha about, you know, the Ir HaMiklot from based upon Maisa Shady? He says, Maiser, in the case of Maiser, there's a special reason why we follow the ruling that we just stated, because he says, Maiser b'chayma tola rachmona. The Rebbeinu Shalom, in other words, meaning the Torah itself, placed the stress upon as to whether you're within the wall or without the wall of Yerushalayim. But ore niklot, as far as the cities of refuge are concerned, b'dira tola rachmona. There the Torah stresses the fact that he has to live, he has to dwell within the Ir HaMiklot, right? And he says, and this is where we left off last week, but I didn't finish the sentence over there, he says, b'naifai mitador le, but b'yakore loy mitador le. Meaning as follows, that if he is underneath the branches will provide literally dira for him. In other words, he can find shelter underneath the branches.
Yeah.
Whereas the ikar, I mean, the simply the trunk of the tree or the root of the tree, the root of the tree doesn't give him a dwelling. Doesn't give him shelter. He needs the branches in order to provide shelter. So that, therefore, this is the reason, according to this, why the stress was laid upon not where the tree was standing, but rather where the branches were. Where the branches are. You understand?
Because no, I understand, but it's hard for me to imagine a tree with a tree with branches. If you're standing near the trunk, you got to be underneath the branches.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the distinction there.
Well, I mean, maybe it's a kind of a tree where the branches are so high up you can't see it.
But, I mean,
so it's not providing shelter for him. Maybe that's kind of a tree.
It can be high up, but he's still under the branches.
You've seen pictures of palm trees, but you go up to see a palm tree and you see where the branches are, it's way high up.
Yes.
Way high up.
Yes. But he still would be under the branches.
Maybe yes, or maybe not.
Technically,
I suppose he would be.
Yeah.
But at any rate, as you can see from here, that they don't want, they don't accept, you know, a complete comparison between the two Mishnayos over here. Okay.
Yeah.
So the Gemara continues and says, "We're only Meiser or Meiser." It says, "Look, you're talking about Meiser. I can show you again that there's another statement made, another Mishnah about Meiser, which maybe, you know, is a little bit more relevant. Namely, it says over there, B'Yerushalayim Haloch Achar Hanov, B'Yorei Miklot Haloch Achar Hanov. This particular statement says that in Jerusalem, follow the branches, and also in the cities of refuge, follow the branches. Now, obviously, this doesn't agree.
Where is this?
With what we just said about Yerushalayim. Because didn't we say in Yerushalayim that if he's, let's say,
outside,
that doesn't mean anything. Then.
That's right.
Right. Whereas this would imply that you have to go according. So,
Where is this quote from? From what?
It's a different mission. It's the Mishnah in Maestros.
Oh, Maestros, okay. Maestros,
right, okay. So, Homer Rav Kanas said, he says, Lakasha. He says, no, this is not difficult. He says, why not? Because Horav Yehuda, Horabon. He says, we're really dealing with two different opinions. One is the opinion of Rav Yehuda, and another one is that of the rabbis. They're not necessarily in agreement with each other. D'tanya, and now he quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, "Bama'ora holeichacha pischa be'ilon holeichacha noifa." He says that if you're within a cave, then the cave goes according to where the entrance to the cave is found. If you're by a tree, then you have to follow where the branches of the tree are.
Right. Okay. So, all right, we'll buy that.
And of course, here is some reference to Meisav at that particular time. Okay, I'll take a look at the Rashi on the top. He says, Rabbi Yehuda, he says, in the Meisav, Amar Levil say, right, the statement is a reference to Meisav. He says, Halocha chapischo, in other words, follow where the entrance to the cave is. He says, Kulo bifnim, ufisuko lechutz. For example, if the entire cave, he says, is within Yerushalayim, okay? But where is the opening? The opening is outside of Yerushalayim. Then he says, kilechutz. Then the rule is as if it were outside of Yerushalayim. Whereas kula bachutz, let's say the whole cave was outside, but ufsucho lifnim, but the opening to the cave is within Yerushalayim, then kilifnim, it follows the rule that it's whatever it is for Yerushalayim.
Yeah. Right.
So they say, Eibor, are we to say the Shemat Leila Rabbi Yehuda Gabi Meiser Lechumra? Are we to say, you know, that we follow Rabbi Yehuda in this case in reference to Meiser because it represents a more stringent opinion? Namely, Ikori Bachutz, if the tree's root is outside, right? The nofo bifnim, and the branches face within Yerushalayim. So, ki heche divenoife leimotzi parik. So, just as, he says, that you cannot redeem the fruit in Yerushalayim, which is underneath the branches, because the branches are overhanging Yerushalayim, right?
Right.
So be a coral, then therefore you have to say that where the root of the tree is, also you cannot redeem, right? Nami, Leib Motsi Parik, right? You cannot redeem even though he's outside.
I can now kind of visualize. If you have a palm tree, you can be standing near the trunk, and if the palm tree is leaning over, you can be outside. You don't necessarily have to be under the branches.
You can be near
the trunk, but not under the branches.
Correct.
You can be under the branches, but not necessarily near the if it's on a, you know, palm trees have a tendency to lean over.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now he takes the opposite case. Okay. Well, if it's ikorim mibifnim, let's say that, in other words, the root of the tree now is within Yerushalayim, right? V'nofo mibachutz, whereas the branches are outside. So he says, ki heche, divenofo leimotzu ochil b'leipidiyo, just as that, as far if he's under the branches, right, he's not allowed to eat without first redeeming the fruit. Because after all, where is he? He's still outside Yerushalayim, so he has to redeem that fruit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we would say that the Ikoroi, if even though he were within Yerushalayim itself, right, and standing next to the tree, so namile motzit ochel b'devadiyo, he would not be permitted to eat fruit without redeeming them, right? This is the way it sounds, that he has to redeem the fruit. And yet, what did we learn before? We learned that in reality he's not supposed to redeem fruit
if he's within the boundaries.
Within the Yerushalayim itself, he has to eat what he has. because it's Kodesh, it's holy, right?
That's right.
So, as you can see, I mean, we have difficulties, you know, with trying to reconcile these various traditions. Elo gabe ore miklot, but in reference to the cities of refuge, bishlemo ikore bachutz benoifim bifnim, in accordance with the situation where the tree itself is outside the boundary, right, but the branches are within the city of refuge, within the tchum, as we said. So, just as if he's underneath the branches, right, then the Goel Adam cannot kill him. So, be a coral. So, even if he was standing next to the tree, and the tree, as we said, is outside the boundary, right? But namile matzah kotile, the goel adam is not allowed to kill him. Eloi kori bifnim benoifi bachutz. But let's take the opposite case, that the root of the tree is within the ir hamiklot, right? Within the tchum, benoifi bachutz, and the branches are outside. Ki heiche divenoifoi. So just as that the Goel Adam can't slay him if he is outside underneath underneath the branches, right? So we would say also that if he's standing within, next only to the trunk of the tree, right? So the Goel Adam would be able to kill him. Now, needless to say, this is what you're trying to tell me. He says, Hogav Aikai, look, isn't he standing within the Ir HaMiklot? So what right does the Goel Adam have, you know, to come to try to kill him? So obviously, just making comparisons of this type, you know, and working it out on the basis of logic is not going to work.
Right.
Won't work. So Amar Rava. So Rava said, Biikore, he says, where the root of the tree is, the fuliyal mole plige the le matzil kotel. Everyone will be in agreement, he says, that it makes no difference, that the Goel Adam certainly cannot kill him, you know, if he's standing next to the root of the tree in Yerushalayim, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the fuliyal mole plige le matzil kotel.
Is that the trunk of the tree?
Huh?
What about the trunk of the tree?
Yeah, well, I'm saying, I mean, if he stands next to the trunk of the tree, it provides refuge, unlike what we said just a minute ago, right?
Well, this is not outside the boundaries.
Within the
boundaries.
He says, all right, let's read again. Omar Rava, right? Rava said, the ikore, right, as far as the trunk of the tree is concerned. I say trunk, in reality, ikor means root, okay?
Roots, okay.
But I'll say trunk.
Oh, no,
right.
Roots
so
can be...
Yeah,
can
all
be,
right. The root of the tree says, okay, the chulei yamu le plige, the le matzah kotel, right? That,
that
he cannot
sense.
Kill, the Goel Adam cannot kill, right? The le matzah kotel, that he cannot. Oh, yeah, right. But then, he brings another possibility. It says, kai benoife, maybe he's standing underneath the branches. He says, okay, look, the guy may be the ikar, in other words, the root is within Yerushalayim. Now, we said before that if the branches overhang, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it provides shelter for him, even if he steps out the tachum, right? But now they say, look, even if the tree is standing within Yerushalayim, okay? But he is on branches, he's on a branch, and the branch is outside. So, by virtue of the fact that he's outside, it's not providing any protection for him. Why? Because the guy, he says, can kill him. In other words, the Goel Adam can kill him by shooting arrows at him, throwing rocks at him. So he says, "The chulei yamo le plige, the matzah kotele,"
implying that the Goel Adam cannot go within the boundary,
right,
to get him.
Correct.
He could shoot him
right.
From afar.
In other words, we're saying he can't go within, but nevertheless, he could do those
could
things in order
him, yeah.
to try to get him
right.
the other way, right? says, keep pligay. Where is there a difference of opinion? He says, the neve ikore darga lenoife. Where you have to climb up the trunk of the tree in order to get to the branches. Mar sovar. One opinion is, heve ikore darga lenoife. In other words, that, you know, you say that the root or the trunk of the tree serves as a ladder, and therefore, technically, the Goel Adam can climb up in order to kill the guy who's standing outside, on branches outside the territory, outside the tchum. And the other opinion is, you cannot make, you know, say that the trunk serves as a ladder for it, and therefore the Goel Adam would not be permitted to kill him. So Rav Ashi said, my achar hadov. He says, no, don't say that what the Mishnah is saying is that you follow the branches, but what it says is af achar hadov. But rather, what it means is that we judge also according to the branches. In other words, you judge according to where the yikar is, and you also judge according to where the nof, where the branches are.
So what conclusion do we come to?
We have to come to the following conclusion. Even though they suppose that the Goel Adam has different ways of killing the guy, as long as he's out there, but in reality, the guy deserves the protection of being in the Ir HaMikvah. If the tree is standing in the Ir HaMikvah, then he deserves that right. So we cannot say that everything goes according to the branches.
But according to the Mishnah, the original Mishnah, if the tree is within the boundaries of the Ir HaMikvah,
and the branches are outside,
he stands underneath the branches, he is protected.
Correct. But
so
we
it's
see,
in effect
there's
extending
a
the boundaries.
Correct. So that would lead to the supposition that, you know, he could shoot at the arrows up there and things like that and so on together, because he's technically outside, even though the branches are there.
Yeah.
But in the final analysis, I think that we can safely assume that the Goel Adam doesn't have the right to do that.
I think the intent is to extend the protection to the accused further than just the 2000.
Right. Okay.
All right, we're going.
No, yeah, I'll go on. I want to move a little bit more before I have to leave for the station.
Well, it's 5 after.
Yeah. That's decent. All right. The Mishnah says, Horag b'yisah ha'ir. Let's say our manslayer, who is now living in the year HaMiklot, right? All of a sudden, an accident happens, and he kills another guy, accidentally. Very
easy. He's prone to accidents.
So, in that case, what should happen to him? So he says, Goyle mishchuna l'shchuna. Then, in that case, he has to go into exile from one neighborhood in the city to another neighborhood. Because he has to go into exile, all right?
Changes,
so it means, let's say that he had a street in Longmeadow. I mean, he had a house in Longmeadow over there, so he'll have to go to Springfield. Or if he's with, let's say, within the Forest Park, so he'd have to go to the downtown area in order to live.
Assuming that was all one city.
Yeah, right. Of course, we're talking within the city itself. Well, then Levi, and what if he happened to be a Levite? So in his case, then it's Goyle Meir Le'ir. He goes from one Levitical city to another Levitical city. All right. Tana Rabbonim. So the sages said, V'samti l'chom mokem. What does it mean, and I will set aside for you a place? He says, V'samti l'cho b'chayecha mokem. Wherever you are living, there I'll also put a place for you. So, in that case, it means that if you are living in the Ir HaMiklot, then I have to make another place for you in order to find refuge, right? Mimkoimcha Asheyonus Shoma. And it will be within the place where you have already fled in order to find refuge before. So, based on this, they say, as a matter of fact, we have to assume that accidental deaths occurred even while the people of Israel were traveling in the wilderness. And then the question is, so, if a person killed by accident while the people of Israel were traveling in the wilderness, where would he go to?
Yeah.
So this is what they're going to say. It says, Malame, the Pasuk teaches us, Shehoy Yisrael maglin b'midbar, that the people of Israel carried out already the din of exiling, somebody who had slain accidentally, even while they were in the wilderness. So the question is, Vayechon Maglin, so where did they go to? Where did they exile them to? So the answer is the Machnei Leviyah. They went to the camp of the Levites. You have to remember that while the people of Israel were traveling through the wilderness on their way to Eretz Israel,
traveling each day.
Right. Well, of course, you know, they traveled by Shvatim and everything else.
Right.
But remember, in reality, there were three camps. What do I mean by three camps? First of all, you had what is known as Machneh Shechinah. This is where the Aron HaKodesh was.
Right.
Okay? And then, surrounding it, you had the Levites. The Levites were there in order to provide protection for the
Mishkan,
right? And also, you know, to serve it. Exactly. So that was the Machneh Leviyah. Okay? And then the last one was, of course, Machneh Yisrael, where all the other tribes lived, okay?
Yeah.
So, in that particular case, let's say that the person who was a member of tribe, whatever tribe it may be, but he killed somebody else, so what was his punishment? They had to send him into exile in order to protect him from the Goel Adon. So where did he go? The answer is he went into the Machneh Leviyah, together with the Levites. That's where he found refuge, even the Levites. And to a certain extent, it's based also upon the idea of Samti Lechom Mokim, that I will make for you a place. It's as if the Rabbeinu Shalom tells Moshe Rabbeinu, look, you're a Levi. Don't forget, Moshe Rabbeinu was a Levi too, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll make a place next to you, and, you know, there's the place, Asher Yonus Shoma, where the manslayer can flee.
But
okay.
Then, where does the accident take place? Within the
we're talking about an accident taking place in the Machneh Yisrael.
The Machneh Yisrael. Okay.
Machneh Yisrael.
So then
right.
You can go to Machneh.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's where you found refuge. Okay. Okay?
But what if it happened in the camp of the?
All right. So he says, Mekan Omruv, and based on this, they also said that Ben Levi Shehorag, that if a Levite killed accidentally, then in that case, in the wilderness, it doesn't say what, but obviously he would be moved from one place to another, maybe, okay?
Yeah.
Don't remember reading that it happened to any Levite, but theoretically it could happen, right? But what happens, you know, once they got to Eretz Israel and they have a lot of territory, so it says, in the case of a Levite, so Gela Mepelech Lepelech, he has to wander from one district to another district. Pelech is a district, okay? The Yim Golo Lefilchoi, and let's say he found refuge, you know, he had to be exiled to his own area, then in that case, Pilcho Kolto, then his own area will also provide refuge for him. It's not that he necessarily must go to a completely different area altogether, but if he can't go to another one, then in that case, even his own place will provide refuge for him as well. Okay?
Otherwise, they couldn't touch him.
Yeah.
What's
Shvatim?
Shevet.
The tribes, like, you know, Reuben, Shimon, Yehuda, Yisachar, Dan, and so on, those are the Shvatim, okay? Yeah. So Shevet. That was Machneh Yisrael, because they were, you know, the camp of the Israelites, by the way. No, the Levites had their own. They had says of Soviet La Mishkon Yachanu. That's what it's written.
No.
Mishkan.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Well, the Levites had to encamp around the
Mishkan.
The Mishkan. Okay? That they had to do. But that was called the Machneh Leviyah. As I said, there was the Machneh Shechinah, okay? Then there's Machneh Leviyah. In other words, of the Levite. Yeah, right, exactly. Where the Mishkan was, right, this was the Machneh Shechinah. This is where the Divine Presence was particularly manifest, okay? And of course, I mean, Kahanim had to take care of whatever it was, okay? Aaron of Onov and so on, you understand? All right. The Machneh Leviyah, these were the Levites, and they had all their jobs assigned and so on, which included not only, you know, carrying and taking care, you know, singing
fire
and everything else, right? But also it included actually doing guard duty. They had to guard the Mishkan to make sure that no wise guy would, you know, would approach.
Yeah,
okay? And then everybody else was in the Machneh Yisrael. Now, what would happen, however, if a person...
The watches, the
Yeah, yeah, of course they had different watches. Absolutely. Yeah, well, obviously, even among the Israelites, they had different watches. But I'm talking about the watches that were there in order to guard the Mishkan. I'm not talking about the people to make sure that, you know, there aren't Ganovim or enemies attacking and so on.
Yeah, well,
absolutely. Yeah. Even afterwards, I mean, the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they still needed them, of course. You always had to have, you know, security to make sure that nothing wrong would happen. Yeah, well, I mean, remember we had, I mean, the business, I mean, that we learned.
Brachas.
Right, and Brachas, you know, the very first Mishnah over there, you know, about that Sof HaShbur HaRishona, and what do we mean by the first watch, and so on and so forth.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, we say then the Kan Omru ben Levi Shehorag Gelam Pelach Pelach. Right, it goes from one to another. The Im Golah Pilchos Pilchah Kotek. Omer Abacha Breder Aviko. He says, my craw, what is the pasuk that tells us that this is taka the case? Because it's written, Ki Beir Miklato Yeshay. He shall dwell in the city of his refuge. And what does it mean? The city of the refuge. Some things. Il Shaklatatu Kvar. The place where he already had found refuge before. Well, of course, this is really in reference not just to the Ben Levi, but even more so, where we said that if a person within the Ir HaMiklot again killed accidentally, then in that case, Ir Miklot Yesha, he used to dwell over there, and until, of course, you know, when the Kain Gadol
passed on. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I think I'm going to stop at this point. We'll save the last Mishnah on this page. As you see, next week, in Yitz Hashem, we'll make a siyum on the second parak and start the third parak.
Tell your son-in-law he owes us 15 minutes.
Okay. I think he would be happy if I would stay till the end of the parak.
Go get him.
Anna's worried, you know, staying in the station alone.
Ahmed Beis, down at the bottom of the page.
4 lines to the bottom, where we have the last Mishnah of this chapter.
Very good. So we'll meet next week.
Yeah, Yitz Hashem will meet at 7:30, and we'll devote full time.
That will be January 18th.
No, today is already January 17th.
No, 17th,
excuse me.
January 24th, I stand corrected. I just want to see if you guys are awake. We're now in Perek Sheni, Makos.
Yeah, we're finishing tonight Perek Sheni. We'll start Perek Shlishi tonight.
So we're on
Yud Beis, Omid Beis, the bottom of the page. Okay, good. All right. The Mishnah says, okay, Kayetze Bo. Likewise, Rotzeach Shigol Leyumik Lotto V'Rotzan Sheilach Abdo Yom Alehem Rotzeach Ani. Okay. That if a person who had committed manslaughter, right, and he had to be exiled to the city of refuge, and then the people of his city want to honor him, of course it could be either the city of refuge or it could be back home again when he gets back. Well, we'll see afterwards. All right, but at any rate, let's say right now that people, you know, is a chosh of a mensch. Unfortunately, he killed somebody inadvertently. And so he was exiled. So let's say the people want to give him kovet because he's an important person. Okay. So Yom Alehim, he has to say to them, Rutzayachani. He has to say to them, I'm a manslayer. I killed somebody. Omulo. And if they say to him, Afalpichain, nevertheless, then Yakabil Mehen. Then he is to accept the son from them. Shenema Bizedvar HaRutzayach. As the Posek says, and this literally is the matter, you know, that this is the subject of, you know, what the Rotzeach is all about. But what does Devar mean literally? It means word. So that therefore the Zedvar Rotzeach means literally that the Rotzeach has to tell them specifically, you know, that look, I'm a Rotzeach, is it right for you to honor me? Okay. All right. The problem over here is only the word Kayotzebo. Rashi doesn't comment upon it. It means, you know, likewise. The question is, what is likewise? What does it have to do with the preceding Mishnah, which says that, you know, if he killed somebody while he was already in the city of refuge, and again, you know, he committed an accident, right? He accidentally killed somebody. So Gaila Mishchuna Nishchuna, we said, right? That then he has to go into exile from one area in the city to a different area. In other words, he has to experience the idea of Golas.
Going from one place to another.
Right. Well, then Levi Gaila Meiliyah. And if he is a, you know, a Levite, so he has to go from one city of refuge to a different one, because remember that there were, altogether, there were 6 official cities of refuge, but also there were 42 cities given to the Levium, and they also would provide shelter. Okay?
I mean, the cities of the Levium could also provide shelter for
Rotzeach. In other words, right, if the Rotzeach came in over there, then he also had the protection of being the city that belongs to the Levium.
Could he stay there?
Yeah, he could stay over there. Should he pay rent over there? This we'll see in the Gemara. They're going to ask the question. But, you know, the question is, what is the connection where it says Kayotze Boy, likewise? So one way to explain it is the fact that, you know, that just as if a person commits, you know, he kills without the intention, it was accidental and so on, but nevertheless, what does he have to do? He has to feel that he has to experience some sort of a sense that he's being punished, you know. And Golas in this respect, you know, by wandering from one place to another, or having to go from this part to this part or something like that, it's still an experience, you know, that here you thought you were rooted already, you had your house over there or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But remember we said that you have to provide with all the necessities for life and so on, the your hamiklot, right? So, and he has to be uprooted and go and find a place where to live in some other part of the city. Okay. If he was accustomed to Long Meadow, then he has to get used to living on St. Hungry Hill. Downtown over there.
So, likewise.
Then in that case, we'd say likewise, you know, that just as he has to experience a certain amount of charata or something like that, so if the people say, look, we want to honor you, so the first thing he has to say is, look, I don't deserve this honor, okay, because I am a Rotzeach. This is one explanation. However, there's another explanation that's given, and that's based on a Mishnah over here at the end of Masechet Shviyos, where you have the quotation, but it's part, there it forms a sequence, okay? In Shviyos, remember, what does Shviyos mean? It means the seventh year. Okay. So we know that there are many, many features to Shviyos. It's not just that they're not allowed to do any kind of agricultural labor, but, you know, this is what we call Shmitas Karkos. In other words, the fact that the land itself has to lie fallow during that year and cannot be worked. But then we also have another law in the Torah which deals with what we call Shmitas Ksofi. In other words, that the seventh year cancels out debts that have not been repaid. Now, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, you know. I mean, the basic idea there is
I thought
that
it was the Jubilee year that... no, just the seventh year.
The seventh, right. So, at any rate, you know, the basic idea over there is simply the fact, you know, that, you know, if a person is too poor to pay back the chov that he owes, so we want to give him a new start in life. And so if he hasn't paid it back by the time that the Shviyos, the seventh year, comes, then in that particular case, the debt is automatically cancelled. Now, I have to tell you, of course, that the Gemara, that the Mishnah in Shviyos also, however, provided a certain remedy for the situation in a different way. That, you know, because people, as let's say, they saw the seventh year was approaching and they were asked to give a loan, they were very much afraid that they'd never see their money.
Right.
Okay? So if that's the case, so then Hillel, more than 2,000 years ago, created what is called a prusbol. Prusbol means that you take your note,
You give it to the court, you give it to the Bezdin,
and now it's the Bezdin to whom you owe the money. Right. If you owe the money to the Bezdin, so in that case, the Shviyos wouldn't cancel that. So that way, he was able to maintain the system that people would come for, after all, remember, they didn't collect any interest for it. you know, they came for a gemilas chesed, and that way it would not be canceled out.
Then it's the Beis Din is obligated to give money to the lender.
Yes, yes, I would say so. I mean, in other words, they are collecting the debt for him.
That's the service fee.
Yeah, right, right. I don't know about the service fee, but that's not mentioned.
You can't, you're not allowed to charge
But, you know, they do have the mention about the institution of Puzbal. All right, there we have the following Mishnah. It says, Abaxia Choy Bashwitz. If a person returns the debt during the seventh year, okay?
Yeah.
So Yomalo Mishamitadi. So the person from whom he borrowed has to say, look, I cancelled out this debt, I mean, because it's Shvi'is. Okay? Right. So Omalo. Now, if the debtor said to the creditor, says, Afal Bichain, nevertheless, in other words, I want to repay you, then in that case it says, Yikabil Mimeno.
He's allowed it.
Then he's allowed to take the money from him. Shenemar, as it is written, Zed Bar Hashmita. Notice the how close it's right. This is, you know, literally the word of Shmita. In other words, he has, you know, if the debtor says to the creditor, well, first of all, the creditor must say it's Shmita, right? Since it's Shmita, so Mishamitani. Therefore,
the
I have cancelled. The creditor has to say, look, I've cancelled it out. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if the debtor says, nevertheless, but I want to repay you, then in that case, he can repay, and it would not be a violation of the law and the Torah, you know.
Well,
okay?
The creditor then has another alternative. He can give the, he can use the Puzbal.
Yeah, but the Puzbal would have to have been given to the court prior
to the
seventh year.
Yeah.
That's a different story. I mean, that's one of the things. He cannot present it during the seventh year because automatically the debt has already been cancelled.
Mm.
So if you're going to handle with the Puzbal, then you must do it prior to the seventh year. Yeah. Some of the luachs that we have. I don't want to say luchos because it may give a somewhat different interpretation. Okay, but some of the luachs that we have, like for example, I always, you know, I send money to Yossi's old yeshiva, Chofetz Chaim, and they print the calendar every year. So every time when they reach, you know, the end of the sixth year and the seventh year cycle, just before Rosh Hashanah, they'll have a form that says, fill in the following form and send it to the Rabbinical Seminary of America, which is what they call themselves in English.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get those.
Right.
Too, sure.
And, you know, and automatically, you know, the debt, you know, that is owed to you will still be valid, or your...
What debt would they owe you?
Huh?
What debt would they owe you? Oh, you mean, I see. They're just reminding you of that.
Right.
I see. They're reminding
you
of the
seventh
year.
So you fill in the form you send to them, and they say, we act as a bezin.
I see. So that somebody who you might have lent money to can't say, hey, I claim absolution under the street.
Right.
I see.
But listen.
Very clever.
If they don't pay, they don't pay. That's all. Well, I've led to people who needed
So are you saying that no loan was ever made?
So,
most loans were made for less than 7 years. Because obviously,
yeah, it's a normal rule it would be.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, there's
a
difference between taking a loan and, you know, saying, let's say you have 5 years to collect or something like that, as compared to where you only have a half year,
right? Of course.
So makes a difference. Although we learned, I mean, that Stam Haldor is Shloshim Yom, or Stam Bilder is Shloshim Yom, which means, you know, that if you don't sit down and write any further terms, then if you lend money to somebody, they have the right to hang on to it for 30 days.
Right.
Because the idea of a Haldor is that they have the right to take the money and use it in order to invest and do whatever they have to do in order to try to get back on their feet. And you can't come and try to collect it for
before
the 30 days have passed. But there's nothing to prevent you from going, you know, from writing a note and say that you'll repay me, let's say, in a year or 2 years or something like that, that you have the right to do. So now this Mishnah in Shvi'is. Yes. Pardon me?
It's from my Shtar Chol.
Star Chov, right, absolutely. Yeah. And now the Mishnah there in Shavuos continues, Kayotze Bo, likewise, now it draws a parallel between what we learned concerning Shemitah with the Rotseya. Okay, let me finish this.
Oh, this is your point. Right.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's actually some reference to the Mishnah we have over here.
Oh,
the
okay.
problem that we had is it says Kayotze Bo. It starts
likewise.
By saying likewise. So the question is, what is the likewise? I mean, what are they comparing it? I mean, what is the sequence over there?
Okay.
You understand?
But here
it makes more sense because this is the actual language of the Mishnah in Shavuos. And there are times that we'll find that the Mishnah will repeat in one place, in one Masechta, what it said in a different Masechta. The reason being, again, remember it was oral tradition. It was easy, you know, to
remember it.
To remember it, exactly.
In certain sequence,
exactly, So that, for example, in the first chapter of Megillah, there's a whole slew of things of Ein Bein. There's no difference between this and that, between this and that, except for this. Okay. As for example, from the Tzora, or between Shabbos and Yom Tov, and things like that, you know. Subsequently, you'll find that, you know, let's say in Psochem, that they'll quote, you know, Ein Bein. Or in some other Masechta, they'll quote Ein Bein, you know, as it's relevant to that particular Masechta. Whereas they were all simply grouped together in Megillah, because it was easy that, you know, all the Mishnahs over there began with the theme of Ein Bein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no difference between this and that, this and that, this and that. Okay. All right. So here
are you going to tell us that the Shemitah year also dissolves the Rotsa?
Is what?
Dissolves the murderer?
No. That I'm not going to say. But it says, likewise, Kayotze Boy, Rotseach Shegola Liyir Miklot, right, that if a Rotseach has gone into exile in the city of refuge, Rotsuan Shehir Lechabde, and the people of that city want to honor him, right? So Yom Alehem, he has to say Ritzeach Ani, right?
Right.
Omru lo Yafal Pichein, just in the same language, you see. Omar lo, before it said Omar lo Yafal Pichein, right? Nevertheless, I want, you know,
right.
We want
right.
to honor you, so you come Yom Alehem, right? Exactly the same thing. Shenem, I was in the Vaharitzeh. So we see, there it's more germane. Okay? All right, now to continue on the next daf over there, Yud Gimel.
Right.
All right. Next question that they ask in the Mishnah is about, did you have to pay rent for being in the Ir HaMikla? Good question. Malim ho yosochal alavim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, they have to pay rent to whom? To the Levites. Okay?
Where is this?
The top of Yud Gimel.
Oh, ho yosochal alavim. Okay, divrei Rabbi
Yehuda. Yeah, okay. Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir says, "Lo hayu ma'alim lehen sachar." They did not pay rent to the Levim. Okay? All right, let's analyze that first of all, because the next one, again, you know, deals with a slightly different Indian, although it's still all connected. All right. Ma'alim hoyu. Let's take a look at the Rashi first of all.
Mm-hmm.
All right. According to Rashi, ma'alim hoyu he'orim, you see that? The cities paid rent. Right, they paid rent to the Levites. Sherotzim sochem mehem es potei hadira, because the Rotzim were renting from them. That is from the city authorities. In other words, the houses in which they dwelt. Or another possibility is to take it in the sense that you know that the cities had to pay rent